Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I'm Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my two-part interview with Major League umpire Tim Cheetah. He is a 32-year umpiring vet, 26 in the big leagues, 13 postseasons. He was involved in three World Series, also did some All-Star games. You know, opening day is like minutes away. And so to get you in the mood for baseball, we have a very interesting guest talking about an interesting facet of baseball that you don't think about too much, and that is Major League umpiring. Now, if you missed part one, after you listen to this, go back and check that out. We're like in the middle of our interview, and we're talking about the fact that one of the beauties of baseball is that you can see 10,000 games, and the next night, you may see something that you've never seen before. So that's the point where we begin part two with Tim Cheetah, right here on Hollywood and Levine. When I was hosting Dodger Talk, and I would see Vin Scully every day.
Oh, yeah.
And there were plays from time to time where I would go in and say, did you ever see that before? And he'd go, nope, yeah. Nope. And that's 67 years of.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and when I first came up, all those veteran guys, Vin Scully, Ernie Harwell, Chuck Thompson, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Mike Shannon, Jerry Howarth, and I could go on, but the veteran Herb Carneal in Minnesota, they all stopped by the umpire's room before the game. They all came in to say hello. They all knew us personally, which was always easy. It's hard to go on the air and totally rip somebody that you know personally. You know, you can say, and most of those guys weren't hard on umpires anyway. You know, the most they would ever say was, well, the Cardinals might have caught a break there. That kind of thing, or whatever. And that was it. They just moved on. Today, and this isn't really a shot at the modern-day broadcaster, but they don't know the guys personally. Chip Carey is one of the few left. And now I just see his – one. Was it one of his boys got the job in Oakland? I think I saw that today on Facebook. I don't know if it's one of the twins or not. I think it is. So we're talking, what, fourth generation now?
Yeah.
Major League family. Mm-hmm. But the modern day guys don't really know the umpires personally the way they should. So the umpires today are not nearly the part of the family that we used to be. I can see that. I can see it and hear it in a broadcast. And of course, given all the electronic analysis that takes place on telecasts now, there's more reference to that. A lot of times they won't even introduce the plate umpire until the first pitch that he calls a strike that is supposedly outside of the, you know, imaginary box that's on the screen. And then they'll say, oh, by the way, tonight's umpire is Ken Levine behind the plate. Otherwise, they don't even identify it. So that's kind of disappointing to me that the guys aren't known just on a personal level, only on a level where maybe if they think they screwed something up.
To me, that was part of the fun, was getting to know the umpires and the coaches and scouts and everyone who is really just associated with the game. All right, so let me ask you some questions that I've asked other Major League umpires.
Sure.
Okay. What is the difference in play between AAA and the big leagues?
The ability to hit the breaking ball, probably, as a hitter, the ability to hit it, especially a slider split finger type, You don't see too many guys throwing the good old fashioned curveball anymore, but that slider, now what do they call it? A slinger, or they've got it, they're throwing it like a frisbee kind of thing. The ability to hit that pitch, and as a pitcher, the ability to throw it for a strike. I think that's what separates it more than anything else.
I get two answers. I get
okay,
two
and
answers.
The second thing I would say is simply the major league game, just like, again, the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, is so fast. It is so fast. These guys are world-class athletes, every single one of them. You don't see the heavyset guy that runs real slow. You don't see those guys playing anymore. Every one of these guys has 4-3 speed to first base if they run hard. You know, their arm strength from, like, outfielders throwing the ball, infielders' arm strength, that sort of thing, that is one of the biggest differences. The other difference is the inability to make the routine play. They can make the superstar fantastic play, and they mess up the play that they should make. They make that a challenge.
I've seen that so many times. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, to me, those are the biggest differences, I think. What are your What are the two answers?
No, the pitching, as you said, and being able to hit breaking balls. And the other I hear, which you kind of alluded to, was defense.
Yeah.
That these guys will make plays where umpires in the minor league will see a ball being hit and go, okay, no chance.
Correct.
And in the majors, you go, heads up.
Right.
he could get this.
The triple, and that even started when I first came up. You know, middle infielders like the White Sox had Ozzie Guillen at short and Julio Cruz at second. You know, Tony Fernandez at short, Roberto Alomar at second. Those guys, you know, you get a ball hit up the middle where they're converging. You know, in Triple A, they're just hoping to keep the ball in the infield, maybe get it out. These guys are thinking too. They're thinking, we're going to turn a double play on this play. So don't give up on anything. Because all of a sudden you're caught napping, thinking they didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting anything done here, and here's a double play in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is very, very accurate and very, very true.
What is a half swing? How do you determine a half swing?
Good question. They've tried and tried for years to come up with some sort of definition for this. A half swing is kind of a term that really doesn't make much sense one way or the other, because there's no such thing as a half ball or a half strike. So I always told my guys this, especially when they were young guys coming up. Okay, you're working first or third base. What's the first thing that can happen to you as an umpire at that position? Okay, first thing that can happen to you is a balk if there's a runner on base. So where should your eyes be? Your eyes should be on the pitcher. Your eyes should always be where the ball is if it's in play. If you have timeout, okay, you can look away. But if the ball's in play, everybody's eyes should be where that ball is. Next thing that can happen is a check swing. Before he even puts the ball in play is a check swing. And I told guys this. If you look at replays, first of all, replays don't do half swings, check swings, whatever we want to call them. They don't do them justice because the cameras are seldom, if ever, in the proper position. Remember that the umpire is on the foul line, and that's what he's looking at. Cameras, the next time you watch a major league game, take a look and you'll be able to tell that the camera on the right-handed hitter is behind the on-deck circle. So mm-hmm. if he goes this far, it looks like he went. Pretty much every replay you see, it looks like they went.
Right.
It really does. So, but I tell my guys, don't think about that. Don't think about, you know, consequence. You got to call what you see. And this is what you should be looking for. If the head of the bat crosses the foul line, or that front corner of the plate, if the head of the bat crosses there, he went. With one exception, if the only way it got there was he was trying to avoid being hit by a pitch. Now you can't say, oh, he broke his wrist or all these those things. Don't even factor them in. Just what the head of the bat does. But if it only gets there because he was trying to avoid being hit, don't call that a swing. That's unfair. But if he gets the bat that far, call it.
That's the best explanation I received. I remember asking one umpire, and I don't remember who, but I asked him that question, and he said, well, I kind of look at intent.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, no, you're in the mind reading business.
Yeah, you're complicating something that's simple. Keep it easy on yourself. Then that way, and I always told the guys, if you do that, and I didn't invent this. I was taught this by a longtime veteran umpire that was the greatest guy I ever umpired with, greatest umpire I ever worked with. And you know, if you operate on those guidelines, you will be consistent both ways. You know, because now all of a sudden you've got the same looking swing from one side, and then the other team comes up in the same, but you're trying to get intent in there. Well, he intended to hit it, he didn't. You're going to be in trouble.
Right.
If you don't call both of those swings, you're going to run somebody. Because, you know, and you have to understand, the other thing I said that's really, 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 really important is, if you're the plate umpire, don't be in a hurry to call it yourself. You've got help out there. You shouldn't be calling that unless you're 100% sure that he went. Otherwise, say no. And when they ask you, you ask right away. Because you're obligated, if you call ball and they say check it, you have to check.
Right.
If the plate umpire says swing, it's over. There is no appeal of that, which I think that's going to change in our lifetime. I think eventually if the Players Association want to have the opportunity to have a strike reversed to a ball, if they want it badly enough, they'll get it. But the other thing is, ask right away. And if you're out there, you answer right away. You, whatever you've got, you should know what you have before he asks you. That way you're letting the teams know that you were paying attention. You were looking at it right away, and you've actually got your hand up or your arms out before those eyes were looking here in the dugout are now on you. Get it in and get it out, because in the end, it's nothing but a ball strike call. So if you, as a plate man, you go, no, 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 he didn't go. No, 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 check it, check it. No, he didn't go. No, he didn't go. And now you wait. Okay, did he go? As a base umpire, I'm going, yeah, he went, but you waited. Now I'm just going to make you look bad if I ring it up. You know, that kind of thing. Just get it in and get it out. It's a ball strike decision. We shouldn't be waiting that long for that. And you'll find out, you know, you're not going to run people over that stuff. They appreciate the fact that you're paying attention and you're getting it in and getting it out.
Talk about disputes with managers. Okay. You know, when managers and umpires are screaming nose to nose, you know, I think to myself, where else in polite society is that behavior acceptable?
You know, it's funny now because with replay, you don't see arguments anymore on the field because you're not allowed to argue a replay if they've gone to the replay and it either upheld.
I know, and I miss it.
I know too. I do too.
I miss. Where's Earl Weaver and Lou Piniella when we need them?
Right. So now they'll just. You know, if you've got that manager over there, that's the other thing that exists today that didn't exist before is, you know, every team now has so many vice presidents. You know, that's another thing that's changed in the game more than anything. It used to be, you know, if you looked up, let's say the Baltimore Orioles, and it would show Peter Angelos, owner, Dan Duquette, a general manager, and who at the time was managing the team? Well, Davey John or Buck Showalter. Okay, let's put those three. That's it. Now you've got a full page of vice presidents of this, that, this, that, this, that. The manager is no longer the manager. He is the field manager. He is considered to be middle management. That never used to be. He was part of the upper echelon. So that's changed dramatically. And when you get a team that is maybe people think they're underachieving, then two vice presidents get together and they say, Levine, he needs to argue more. He needs to get ejected more. You know, and the manager's like, I don't need to be aggravating the umpires out here. That's not going to get us wins. We need pitching. You know, we need advance the runner. We need hit, you know, timely hitting. But the guys will get that who've never been on the field, they say he needs to get ejected more. So once their job gets in trouble, and that's another question. I'll answer a question with a little question. People ask all the time, who's the toughest manager to deal with? Toughest guy to deal with is the guy that's lost 10 in a row, whoever he is, because all of a sudden he's feeling the heat and they're willing to fire guys with 2 years left on a contract guarantee. That happens nowadays. That never used to happen. First of all, managers never got guaranteed money. Billy never got guaranteed money. Weaver never had more than a one-year contract at a time. So, you know, those guys, that was a different era. So now ejections are strictly the result of ball strike calls. And what happens is if they're on edge, what's going to happen is you call a pitch and they've got a monitor, you know, behind the dugout, out of sight, but somebody's back there and the ball is, you know, that far outside of that little box, and they go, that's outside. And now somebody, and then they start tripping. They start, bam, let's go, bring it in. You know, all right, I don't want to hear any more of that. And next thing you know, what's going to happen? He gets run. Aaron Boone got run 9 times last year, something like that. All 9 balls and strikes. Balls and strikes from the dugout. From the dugout.
Right? Is there a trigger when you're arguing with a player or a manager? You know, you can have a healthy argument. You can even be yelling, but are there certain trigger expressions or words or things that everybody knows you trip that wire, you're gone.
You're done. Right. Yes. The key word in any of those situations is you, Y-O-U. Because guys always ask you, well, you know, if he swears at you, if he uses bad language, if you ejected everybody on a major league field for using bad language, you wouldn't have anybody left after the national anthem was over. But you is a key word. You, why that word? Because you is personal. And the perfect example is, you know, when you come up as a class A umpire and you're 20 years old and you're wet behind the ears and as green as can be, and you come across some guy that's managed in the minor leagues for 25 years, you know, he's seen him come and seen him go. But you'll hear a guy say, you know, I've been in this game for 27 years and that's the worst call I've ever seen in 25 years. You stay in the game for that one. Why? Because, first of all, I don't know where you've been for 25 years. I don't know what you've seen, and maybe it is the worst call you've ever seen. But if you say, you are the worst umpire I have ever seen in 25 years, you're done immediately. You. Why? Again, it's personal, and it's verbal abuse. No one in any walk of life should have to put up with verbal abuse. You go to a restaurant, and the server, you don't like your meal, you know, and you know, you do whatever you want to do, but you tell the server that, you know, you're the absolute worst server I've ever had. If I own that restaurant, pay your check. I'll pay your check and you leave, because you don't allow that. You don't allow personal verbal abuse.
How often do managers and players then come back and apologize the next day?
Probably 50%, you know, because you do also have the ones where, I mean, I've had several over. I had, oh, I can look it up on retro sheet sometime. I think I had in 3,500 some games, whatever I worked, I think I had just under 100 ejections in my career. And the majority of them were in the first 5 or 6 years. After that, I was hard-pressed to get one or two a year, because they just know who you are. They respect you. Now the guys that I had as players are now managing. You know, so you just know each other better. And now you'll get a situation where, you know, a manager comes out, it's a tough play, and he knows you got it right, but he's got to be out there arguing to protect his player because his player's, you know, putting up a stink. And sometimes they'll say something like, well, I can't go back to the dugout. Oh, okay. Well, do you want to go big or do you want to go soft? What do you want to do? You want to dance a little bit, or you want me to just get rid of you? And they'll tell you. And then they don't, there's no apology necessary. And I never, even when guys would call, a lot of times they'll call the room, say, hey, can I come over? That kind of thing. I said, you don't have to come over here. Don't ever apologize for doing your job. That's your job. You did your job. I did my job. And trust me when I say this, I'm not even out of my uniform yet, going to shower. I'll just say, that was a long time ago. We got a game tomorrow. Let's worry about that one. And when you're done, you're done. And, that's the other advantage we have in baseball. We play every day. So if you're foolish enough to carry a grudge or to let yesterday's game get played today, and that was a line I used to use a lot, we can't play Tuesday's game on Wednesday. We already played Tuesday's game. Let's play Wednesday's game. And they'll appreciate that. They'll appreciate the fact that you let them know that you wiped the slate clear. There is no ill will from yesterday. And you move on. It's a man's game. And if everybody acts like a man, we have no problems.
What do you think of the new rules?
I like every one of them, with the exception. Sorry, I keep having to blow my nose, but I'm up here in the tail end of a cold. Something I haven't had in over 30 years. I don't know how to act. The only one I don't like is the play at the plate. I think they have really, really overreached on that. And
explain what that is. Explain what that is.
I will. They've complicated something that is simple. It used to be, if you made contact, I'm going to start at second base for a double play. If you made physical contact with a middle infielder for the purpose of breaking up a double play, three things had to happen. First, you must hit the ground before you hit him. What does that mean? It means you have to slide. Okay, why? That'll slow you down so it can't be a real injury type hit. Now, years ago, Hal McCray and those guys, they used to go way past the bag, and it was called a roll block. And eventually that's when they brought this interpretation in. You can't, when you make that contact, you have to hit the ground before you hit him. Secondly and thirdly, you must be able to attain and maintain contact with the base. You must be able to. You don't have to do it. Your hand doesn't have to stay on the base. It has to be able to touch it. Then you haven't gone outside of the distance. If it gets, try to demonstrate this on a little Zoom here. If I slide to the right field slide and my closest body part is my left hand to second base, if that can't reach the base, I've gone out of the baseline, and that's interference, and that's a double play. At home plate, it was always different because guys would just come in and, just barrel them.
Right.
The argument was that, he's wearing equipment. You could just as easily hurt yourself as you hurt the catcher. Excuse me. They call it the Buster Posey rule because Posey got hit a few years ago, and he was just standing on the foul line, a few steps toward third base up from home plate, and the throw wasn't even there. The runner just crashed into him. And he got hurt. He hurt his ankle and he was out for 2 months or whatever. And of course, every major sport, they don't want your star players hurt if they can avoid that. But sometimes you get hurt. That's all there is to it. So they discovered later, first they come up with this new rule that says the catcher must allow the runner a clear path to the base. Now, it used to be, You could block a base if you had the ball or were in the act of receiving it. Again, what does that mean? How do you interpret that? Essentially, it means if I'm the umpire, if I clearly see two things, if I see a block and then a catch and a tag, no, that's obstruction. It's you're blocking him too early. If it's all one play, everybody's done their job. That's clean. That's a baseball play. Now the rule is designed to protect the catcher, and they've placed all the onus on the catcher. instead of the base runner. You know, he must leave him a path, which means you got to stand and leave the whole plate wide open, and you have no chance of getting a guy out. And if they simply would do the same thing at the plate as to what they did at second base and left it up to the same thing, you got to hit the ground before you hit the catcher. You can't just crash into him. Secondly, he can do this, but he can block again if he has the ball or if he's right in the act of receiving it. If those things don't happen, then you've got obstruction and the run scores. And if you pay attention to this, and I know a lot of the listeners have seen it, I don't think I've seen that call one time made by the calling umpire on the field. I've seen it overturned in New York every time. The guy sees the play, and it's just a normal baseball play, and he blocked him off nice, and he put the tag down, and he's out. And the opposing team, you know, challenges, and they go to New York, and they reverse it. And I've seen managers absolutely melt down after games when this call was reversed and it went against them. Like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And I think they need to retreat that one. I think it's they've made it undefinable. And I just think they're on the wrong page with that one. Everything else with the clock and
the phantom the second baseman, you're okay with that in extra innings?
What exactly are they calling it? I mean, it's basically you got to have
you start an inning with a runner.
Oh, the runner. Base. Oh, the bat. Yeah. You know, that one's kind of grown on me. Originally, I didn't like it, but in talking when it first came about, I talked with Joe Torre about it, and Joe said, "Well, they tried it in AAA, and it's really, really working well." And he goes, and you know, the way they play today, he goes, we get into extra innings and everybody tries to hit the ball out of the park to end the game. Everybody wants to end the game at their at bat. So you end up with a bunch of strikeouts or a bunch of fly balls and we go 16 or 17 innings. Now the bullpens are fried for tomorrow and our product for tomorrow is affected by it. And the teams have adapted to the point where they're learning a part of the game they never knew. It's called small ball. And the next time you see one of those games, pay attention that, you know, the players are all on the top step. It really is intense because guys are bunting who never knew how to bunt. You know, they're moving the guy over. They're hitting behind the runner. They're doing the little things that really baseball purists love, and I'm one of them.
So, of course, as a baseball purist, now you can pitch a perfect game and lose.
Right. Harvey Haddix. I that one has grown on me. The rest of them, I really, really like. The one with the three batter minimum for a relief pitcher, to me, I think I can see that. I would rather it be a restriction like that through the first six innings. After the sixth inning, I think you should have the right to match up the way you want to match up, lefty, ready, because that's where managers make their money. And that's where the strategy really comes into play. So, I mean, I realize now it's a new strategy because you got to go, okay, I got a right-hander and he's got a lefty, but I got to leave this guy in for three. You know, they have to employ a different strategy. That part I get, but I would rather just see the righty lefty thing in the seventh inning on something like that. But it's fine the way it is. It's everybody's adjusted to it. Players will adjust to anything. And what's the first thing they did? You know, when they first brought in replay, you know, what is replay for? Replay is to be able to correct something that is clearly incorrect. Okay? That's great. What was one of the first things they discovered was the plays at second base, like on a steal play, where the guy beats the play. And now the fielder just holds the glove on him and he comes off the bag by, you know, that much. And then, okay, now he goes from being safe to being out for that. That's really not what they had in mind when they brought it on board. But the players have adjusted to it. Runners don't let go of the base anymore. And fielders still hold it on it, but they know, you know what? If I come off, it's my fault and I'm out. So overall, it's a much better product, if you ask me. You know, that pitch clock is probably the greatest thing ever, as far as I'm
Oh,
concerned.
I agree with you there. What do you
Yeah.
miss the most and what don't you miss?
I miss the guys. I miss the locker room and the camaraderie. The action on the field to a certain degree, yeah. I'm too old to be out there, and there are guys that are still working that are older than I am that I don't think they should be working anymore, but that's not for me to say or decide. But the camaraderie is really the big thing. The thing I don't miss the travel. The travel is, ever since 9/11, it's much more difficult.
You travel
There's
commercial,
We
right?
travel commercial, but we do fly first class, and our hotels and everything. The travel conditions are quite good. You could never complain about that. But for example, let's say you have a Sunday afternoon game in New York, and you've got a Monday night game in Kansas City. Okay, 1 o'clock start on Sunday. You have a 5:45 flight nonstop. You had a 6:15. You had a 7:10. You had an 8:40. You could always go United through Chicago. You were going to get to Kansas City Sunday night somehow, some way, and you didn't have to ride a cheap ticket. You had first class seats and everything else. Now, half the airlines are out of business, and there's one flight, and it's a nonstop, and it's at 6:10. So, when the games were going 3 to 3:45, less than 50-50 chance you're going to make that flight. So now what are you going to do? You got to move out to the hotel by the airport and check back in. And now you're up at 3:30 in the morning because you need to take that first flight the next day. You have to get there. So now you get to Kansas City and it's 9:30 in the morning and your room isn't ready because the person is still sleeping in there. So you're in the lobby like this and you're just beat. And the next 2 days you're catching up on sleep. And the older you get, the harder that is. So that part, traveling is really, really tough. So much so that they've actually done something that I was such an advocate for, and I'm so glad that they've finally done it, is in the postseason, they're chartering small planes for the umpires
Oh,
to make sure
cool.
that make sure they get there. Yeah. Rather than getting stuck in Atlanta. And you're supposed to be in Tampa Bay for a 6:40 first pitch or something. And you just sometimes you have no control over that. And that's a helpless feeling. So that's that part I don't miss one bit. I think I've been out since 2012, and I think I've only flown like a half a dozen times since then. And every time I've flown, Ken, I've had either a delay, a cancellation, a mechanical something. I'm going, I did this for 30 years. Are you kidding me? No, I don't miss it one bit.
You should be able
But
to fly around the world just on your frequent flyer miles.
I've pretty much burned them up with my kids. I let them take everything they possibly could. I've still got some left. I do. But you have to use X amount a year or they take them away from you now. So I'm kind of the reluctant traveler right now. I said, well, I'll go down to Florida for a week just to burn up some tickets so they don't take them away from me. But my grandkids are up here. Two of the three of them are up here, so I stay close to home.
That's great. Well, Tim, this has really been a treat. Thank you so
For
much. And
me as
as a
well.
baseball fan,
Yes, sir.
thank you
And
so much for your years of service.
as am I a baseball fan. I don't think you could be a professional official and not be a fan of the sport. I think I mean, we always say, who's your favorite team? People ask that, well, who's your favorite team? I said, well, the third team. I like the third team the best. That's the team I root for. We got three teams. You got a home team, a visiting team, and you got a team of officials. I root for the team of officials. That's my team. So
Well, you do a
great.
great job. Thank
I
you,
appreciate
sir.
it. Ken, my pleasure. So much I thoroughly enjoyed it today. Thank you.
Fascinating guest, fascinating career. That's Tim Cheetah. And our thanks, as always, to you for listening, and also to Adam and Susie Meister Butler, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller, Jonathan Wolfert, and come back next week. Oh, but before you do that, again, I'm trying to reach 3 million followers on Instagram. And at the moment, I'm at about 1,600. So I'm going to need your support. Hollywood and Levine. You can see a lot of my New Yorker and other cartoons, some that sold and some that were rejected and should have sold. Anyway, we will talk to you again next week right here on
Hollywood and Levine.